Howdy, folks, and welcome to the Moose Podcast 495, The Scientific Method, Take 2. Yeah, I was halfway through or more and realized for some reason it wasn't recording. Well, as I was told, it's always better the second time. Howdy, folks. How are you all doing? So before I get much further, my apologies in advance if I pause, make funny noises, maybe even slur a bit more than normal during this podcast. I have a crown that went sideways, and 11 o'clock this morning is going to be dealt with. But in the meantime, there are certain moments when, let's just say, it doesn't feel real comfortable to be speaking. So my apologies in advance. At the same time, I'm anxiously watching for the delivery man to come up the road because my 7200 F2.0 version 2 is out for delivery. I can't wait. I'm worse than a kid, you know, at Christmas morning. So I'm going to have slurry problems and I'm distracted. So apologize in advance. Spring has sprung here in Montana. We've got leaves popping out. We've got birds nest. Well, they're working on nesting. Seeing robins taking sticks places and chasing the males around each other. And meadowlarks are singing. The pygmy nuthatches are drilling. The flickers are doing their thing. It's spring because, hey, what is it? A couple of days. It's April 1st. Wow. Hey, this episode of the Moose Podcast is being recorded again through Adobe Podcast Beta, and I'm checking, and yes, I see it's recording. Never had that happen to me before. Anyway, it does a great job of making it simple for me to record my voice, and of course, they create the transcript, and you can find all that on your favorite spots like Spotify, Amazon, YouTube, iTunes, and of course, the blog post on the podcast, which has the podcast, the transcript, links to anything I talk about, like my book recommendations or from the doodad list and all other things. So it's out there however you want to. I appreciate you folks helping spread the word on the podcast, be it verbally or written. We keep just ticking up and it's just steady. It's not, and I don't care about being number one. I just want to help you move your photography forward. And I appreciate you helping me spread the word. Speaking of the doodad list, you can find it on the landing page of the website, bottom right corner. And the doodad list, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's just that. It's doodads. It's could be water bottles or spikes for your shoes or muffs for your hand or gloves, all sorts of different odds and ends that as photographers we need, but how do you can't list everything. So I created that doodad list and it has links, takes you to Amazon, which is kind of worldwide. So it's, I figured that'd be the best way for people to buy things that they see that they need. And it's just there. So enjoy it. The other interesting thing is, I believe it was on Petapixel this past week, they had a really interesting interview with one of the lead optical engineers at Nikon Japan. And the topic was simplistic in that, you know, they came out with the Z24-70 2.8 and the Z70-200 2.8, great lenses. Then within a couple of years, they came out with version 2 that are definitely sharper, smaller, lighter, faster focusing, and the question is, how'd you do it? Because the lens is really already remarkable. How'd you make it more remarkable? It's a great interview. And to summarize it very quickly, and this is not AI, it's Moose summarizing. They managed to figure out how to put less glass in lenses through optical science and some really smarteries. And so with that less glass, they can make them physically smaller and they're lighter. And believe it or not, they're sharper, which really kind of contradicts lens design. So if you haven't checked it out, you might. Come on, UPS, get that 7202 here. I can't wait to see it for myself. Pacific Payback. This is a book that I started it on Wednesday and I finished it yesterday, Sunday. It is a 436-page book. To say it's a page burner is an understatement. Now, Pacific Payback, I haunt used bookstores. In this particular case, it's at a convention in Montana. Antique Aircraft Association had one of the members' book collections, you know, take a book for a buck or take five for $4. Anyway, so I picked up Pacific Payback and for a buck at that. What a book. Now, I've read a number of books on the Battle of Midway. So I wasn't really interested in another book on the Battle of Midway. And you look at, you know, the subtitle is The Carrier Aviators Who Avenge Pearl Harbor at the Battle of Midway. It's even got other things on the cover, talks about the Battle of Midway. It's not the last 60 pages of this book. Do they talk about the Battle of Midway? Everything else leads up to the Battle of Midway. And I learned so much that I really didn't know. Now, Pacific Payback, you could really say, is about the Big E, you know, the Carrier Enterprise and the dauntless pilots that were aboard it. I mean, to some of the trivia, not trivia, some of the important facts I learned was that on December 7th, when the Japanese were attacking Pearl Harbor, hoping to find our carriers and destroy them, the Big E was just offshore and they were doing basic training. They were just one direction from which the Japanese came, so they never saw them. But they were so close that they launched their aircraft in defense of Pearl Harbor, and they lost a bunch of their planes, both the enemy and friendly fire, at Pearl Harbor on December 7th. And the book is full of all this kind of information. It talks about, I mean, Dick Best, who's just a legend, and Klosky and Thatch, you know, from Thatch Weave with Wildcats. It's just an amazing book. So Pacific Payback by Stephen L. Moore. You can find the link there on the blog post for the podcast or also on my doodad list. Well, I'm not alone. I'm waiting for the delivery from Bedford's today of the new 7200-28 Mark II. Yeah, Bedford's, bedfords.com. They couldn't get the lens to me any faster, even if they had a Star Trek transporter. Yeah, they got it to me as soon as Nikon got to them, and I'm grateful. That's the way Bedford's works. They have amazing service, great, knowledgeable people, killer prices. So whether you go to the store, they have 7, go to the website, give them a call. They will steer you right. And if it's not what you need, they'll tell you and they'll save you money. And if you give them the old moose somewhere in the conversation, you'll see extra savings after you check out. So check out my friends at Bedford, bedfords.com. It's where I get my gear and I can't recommend them enough to you. The scientific method. There's a commercial running on TV from Lilly, the drug manufacturer. And the first couple times, you know, I listened to it and I said, wow, why does that sound so familiar? And it wasn't till later that I realized that my two mentors, one in biology, one in aviation, both not only operated with the scientific method, but worked hard to instill it in my methodology as a photographer. And I was just absolutely, I was blown away by that realization after all these decades. Now, the scientific method, it's a structured, iterative process for exploring and answering questions about our natural world. Now, that natural world could be everything from fixing my crown to dealing with splitting atoms to anything you want to think about. It's a process that is in many ways structured to answer the many unstructured questions that we have about life. Now, it's got you. There's a number of levels or lists or a way of accomplishing this. The most common is you start off with observation, then you question, research, hypothesis, testing, conclusion, and communication. And these steps lead you through finding what could be either the best answer for you or for the problem. And that's kind of it all in a nutshell. Now, how does this help your photography? Well, in this way, when you think about it, and it can give you direction that otherwise you might not have in dealing with whatever you are in photography. Now, observation. I've talked about this a lot. The classic example I use is the fly fisherman who goes to the edge of the creek or river, doesn't even cast a shadow on the water. He just stands and looks, watches the way the water is flowing, the eddies, where the fish are pulling. The flies, they are, you know, hopefully consuming. So when you make your first presentation, you catch that big guy. That's the most clear example I can of observation. But observation, you know, when you see things, you watch things, you learn things, it naturally starts the process, because then comes the next step. You question. Question is, can be as simple as, how do I photograph it? Or as complicated as, how do I want to tell its story? Because once you start asking that question, you go to the next one, which is researching. You start questioning, you research. Well, do I need this lens? Do I need this location? Do I need this accessory? You start thinking about the observation you made, the question you had, and you start doing research to help answering the questions, because then you come up with the hypothesis. The hypothesis, and believe it or not, the hypothesis, the first time you come up with it, it could be wrong. That's why failure is so important, and we learn from it. But the hypothesis might, you know, say, I need to be at this particular spot on the Florida coast at this particular date with this camera and lens to get this photograph I want. And you might do all those things and find out, wow, I was really off. It could be the wrong lens, wrong location, the wrong date. That's part of it. And that leads you to the next part, which is testing all the things you have observed, questioned, researched, the hypothesis you come up with. You then test that. And that testing is where failure happens, and that's okay. And the commercial, the one thing I like about it, which is it's, you know, making their point more than the scientific method, but they say test, test, test over and over again. They say test and test. And sometimes that is part of the process, because then with that comes the conclusion of the observation, your question, research, hypothesis, and your testing. You come up with a conclusion. In other words, you find the success, whether it's limited or is on a grand scale, you find the success that concludes all that parts of it. And here's the part that really, I think, was driven home by my mentors big time. And until I actually thought about this podcast and that commercial, did I actually figure out where it was instilled in me. And that communication is sharing the knowledge you gained in this process. To repeat, the last part of the scientific method is communication, sharing the knowledge you gained. And this can be in every form you can think of, and some that I bet are still to be invented. It is an important part of the process, sharing. And that sharing doesn't have a dollar tag connected to it. In that sharing, you could be making lots of money or making no money or donating. It could be any one of those things. And as a photographer, understand that Making money, that's part of the process. Sharing because you believe in a cause, that's part of the process. Now, giving a photograph away to somebody because it says it's going to give you exposure, yeah, never bite on that one. That's bogus. But if you believe in a cause, and the cause could be anything from the organization's reaching out to you to something you think is worthy, well, then that sharing, even if it's for free, is priceless. Never forget that. So it's something I invite you to look into. Think about it. Actually make a list. The scientific method, but you could call it the photographic method, because it's what it's all about. Observation, question, research, hypothesis, test, conclusion, and communication. You might just find you will improve your photography taking that scientific method and making it your photographic method. You folks have a absolutely marvelous week. Look forward to talking with you again next week. In the meantime, remember to make every click your story.